Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cara, acne can be tough. Whether your kid is just starting to get breakouts or has been struggling with them for years, there's a great product that can help.
Phyla is the ultimate game changer. It tackles acne right at its root cause, rebalancing the skin's bacteria and packing it with probiotic phages.
Phyla harnesses the superpowers of probiotics, tiny warriors targeting and wiping out the acne-causing bacteria. In studies, Phyla slashed acne-causing bacteria by a whopping 90%.
Phyla doesn't just fix acne you can see. It stops new breakouts in their tracks. It has no harsh chemicals and won't irritate or dry most skin. Phyla's three-step system is like a dermatologist-approved magic potion. Cleanse, apply serum, and moisturize twice a day.
As a special treat for our listeners, you can grab 25% off your first order of Phyla. Head over to phylabiotics.com, enter code PUBERTY at checkout, and kickstart your family's journey to acne-free skin. Check out the link in our show notes for quick access.
Hi, I'm Cara Natterson.
And I'm Vanessa Kroll Bennett.
And we are obsessed with flipping puberty positive.
Puberty is a stage of life best described as a roller coaster of physical and emotional shifts. It happens to literally every human being on earth. And it shouldn't be cringy. It should feel, you know, pretty comfortable.
Which is why we started this podcast and a newsletter, and why we film slightly ridiculous but informative social media videos.
It's why we have a brand that makes clothes that literally feel so comfortable, and why we write books too. Our latest is This Is So Awkward, Modern Puberty Explained.
We have built a universe of puberty positivity, and it all started with this podcast.
We are so happy that you're here.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hi, Cara. You're a little giddy today.
I am. Do you want to know why?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one reason why is I just ate a delicious chocolate chip cookie. Homemade.
Always.
Favorite. Always. But the other is, this is an episode about ChatGPT and how it is impacting your pubescent child's life and your life.
And past your pubescent child, your well past puberty child.
Pre, mid, and post. ChatGPT is ever. So you know what I did just now? I do.
And also, you're never going to hear Cara as excited as what she's about to describe to you.
I asked ChatGPT, has the Puberty Podcast done an episode about ChatGPT? Would you like to know the answer? I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's long, but would you like to know the answer?
Yes, please.
It describes our podcast in detail and says, no, we have not done an episode. But our recent episodes cover various aspects of adolescence and puberty, such as inclusive sex education, adolescent mood swings, talking politics with kids, fainting in teenagers, and understanding gender issues. So clearly ChatGPT is on us. Okay. So then I asked, should they do an episode about ChatGPT? And do you want to know the answer I got? This is an amazing answer. Okay.
I hope it's not no.
Oh, it is not no. It is. Creating an episode about ChatGPT would be a valuable addition to the Puberty Podcast. Here's why. I'm going to summarize. It is a long answer. Number one, relevance to audience. ChatGPT and AR are increasingly integral in our digital lives. And then it goes on about tweens and teens being digital natives, blah, 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 blah. Okay, number two, educational potential. The episode could serve as a resource to educate both parents and kids about AI, demystifying technology. Point three, digital literacy and safety. Addressing AI in the context of digital literacy and online safety could be crucial. And then it has a lot to say about that. Two more. Number four, career and future orientation. Discussing AI like ChatGPT could inspire interest in STEM fields. And number five, this is like they know us, parent-child dialogue. An episode on this topic could spur meaningful conversations between parents and kids about technology, its role in their lives, and how to responsibly use such tools. And then it concludes the following. The podcast format, which blends scientific research with relatable stories, seems well-suited to tackling a complex and evolving subject like AI. Okay, that's kind of awesome.
Because otherwise, we would have had to just stop record and find another topic to talk about if ChatGPT had told us not to do an episode.
That's right. Thank goodness.
I'm very, very relieved about that. Caro, do you want to just give listeners who are not familiar with ChatGPT just like not as long as an explanation as ChatGPT just gave us about why we should do an episode on ChatGPT, but what it is for people who are uninitiated?
You mean for the listener who has been hermetically sealed for the last 12 months in a
much more lovely reality than we're all living in. Yes.
Good. I like that better than my shipping container that was in my brain. So ChatGPT, as I think as almost everyone knows, ChatGPT is one of the artificial intelligence modalities that is out there right now. Right. There are actually a number of AI bots, AI frameworks that are circulating. ChatGPT is the version that has been released by OpenAI, and it seems to have the most brand recognition, I would say. It is very robust in its most recent iteration, which is ChatGPT-4, and it's only getting more robust. And just this week, people like Elon Musk, who is developing his own AI tool, decided that he needed to release his code for his AI tool to the entire world because he feels that it's very, very important for everyone to have access to be able to iterate this technology very, very quickly. There are lots of people in the world for whom that is a terrifying prospect because, I mean, starting with if you've ever read any science fiction, but even if you just let your imagination run away with itself, AI is artificial intelligence. It is computer or machine learning, and it is learning that is trained on content that is fed to it. But ultimately, the goal is that it can iterate what it spits out and can do it essentially. I mean, I'm no computer science person, but it can essentially do it without the humans at some point. And I read an article maybe 3-4 weeks ago that said, God, it was so scary. It said there's a 75% chance this lands in good and a 25% chance this lands a pure evil, which, I mean, right. Vanessa's eyeballs are bugging out of her head.
Well, right? And it's funny because I never use ChatGPT or like I use AI because if you use Google Docs, you use AI. Like there's AI and so much, but I never consciously use it because to me, it feels like cheating.
Right. And just to clarify, like we are all using AI all
the
time.
We're all using it, just not necessarily like proactively recognizing that we're using it.
Right. So you go on Google, you start to type in your term and it guesses,
suggests the rest of that's AI. It's akin to when I used to run without music, like I would go for runs, but I didn't believe you should listen to music while you ran because I'm like,
you're such a purist.
That's like not going for a run. That's cheating. And then I had a dear friend who I began running with and ran half marathons with. And she was like, what are you talking about? Like, try it once and you'll see how much better it is. And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I ever went running without listening.
Great analogy. Music. That is
and
a great analogy.
And it just came to me. So it is, I feel like I'm being a purist about it and also a hypocrite because I use it. I just don't actively choose to like, Caro, by the way, is so into ChatGPT. Like her excitement over the one question, she's so into using it in a variety of brilliant and expedient
formats.
I'm going
to defend myself here. But
I don't say it critically.
But here's why. About 7 or 8 months ago, it was right after ChatGPT made its first round of headlines big time. I went on a Zoom with hundreds of other people and listened to a panel of professors at a university talk about how AI in general and ChatGPT in particular had, in a matter of weeks, transformed their classrooms. And it was incumbent upon them to recognize the new normal and adapt their teaching because it was here to stay. And it was such an impactful conversation. And it ended up including voices all the way down to early education and all the way up through graduate education, talking about, okay, it's here. So how can we teach kids to harness it and to use it? How can we teach them to, you know, one example they gave, if an educator gives a prompt for an essay, some number of kids now, as of, you know, ChatGPT, some number of kids will write an essay using artificial intelligence. Okay,
right.
That's just how it's going to be. So let's own it. Let's have kids use ChatGPT to write the essay, then take the version that ChatGPT wrote and now make it better. Fact check it. Change the grammar. Change the language. Make it your own. Find your voice. It was a way of teaching that I had never even imagined. And I'm not an educator in that way. I mean, I'm an educator of sorts, but I'm not a college professor or a high school educator. And it was remarkable. It was mind-blowing to think about that. And I would say in the several months since I listened to that Zoom, every educator that I ask about this says, absolutely, we have to include it in our teaching.
Right. So the question is, like, to me, the idea of having it write the essay and then like basically gussying up the essay is just horrifying to me.
Horrifying.
Because I know, yes, all of the skills that go into the actual written product. It's the thought, it's the structure, it's the organization. It's like, and also, you know, things like word choice. And so I will start, I was with a bunch of college kids recently and we were talking about like college kids, educators, and parents. And we were having a conversation about ChatGPT and they were explaining how they use ChatGPT in their work and where the lines are, where the boundaries are, and also how they use ChatGPT for things like building resumes and writing cover letters and sending emails to potential employers. And they talked about the vibe of ChatGPT and how, like, you know, when someone has written something using ChatGPT and how they feel comfortable and how it feels like legal to use it. And a lot of it was about organization. It was about outlines. It was about taking masses of information and creating some sort of structure for it. That was what they shared in terms of how they were. These are college and graduate level kids. These are not high school or middle school kids.
Vanessa, we literally have 3 minutes to eat lunch every day. I am not joking. And the challenge is how to make it delicious and healthy and still fit into that tiny window. Our answer is Factor's ready-to-eat meals. They have been a godsend.
We throw our Factor meals in the microwave. It takes 2 minutes and out comes a gorgeous, fresh, never frozen meal. We both love the tamale vegetarian one. It's delish. There's a ton of options every week. There's 60 add-ons, breakfast, snacks, beverages. I love doing the wellness shots with my kids. They think it's hilarious. And I know they're getting vitamins and minerals in their bodies.
So get meals on your table or at your desk in 2 minutes or less. Factor meals eliminate the hassle of prepping, cooking, and cleaning. You can customize with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can press pause or reschedule depending upon your lifestyle.
So to order, Go to factormeals.com/puberty50 and use the code puberty50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That code is puberty50 at factormeals.com/puberty50 to get 50% off your first box, 20% off your next box. And I am going to go do that right now because I need more Factor meals in my refrigerator. Cara, lately I have been lying awake at night. I'm physically exhausted, but I can't sleep because my mind is so wired with everything going on between work and my family. So I've added Magnesium Breakthrough to my nightly routine, and it actually helps calm my mind. It helps me get better sleep, and I wake up feeling better rested. I'm less cranky, and I'm more patient with my family and with you.
Oh, I've noticed. And it's because unlike other magnesium supplements that might give one or two formulations of magnesium, Magnesium Breakthrough has 7. That's why you're sleeping so well and waking up refreshed. Now, dietary supplementation is always best, Vanessa. So that means eating your minerals and vitamins is the best way to get them in. But if you can't or you don't get enough, Magnesium Breakthrough is the way to go. It can also help digestion, though too much helps your digestion too much, which is not a good thing. It can support muscle recovery, so bye-bye, Charlie horses. And it helps build dense bones, which is especially important for women approaching and in menopause.
We have an exclusive offer for our listeners. You can go to buyoptimizers.com/puberty, buyoptimizers.com/puberty. And you can use the code puberty10 during checkout to save 10%. That promo code is puberty10 at buyoptimizers.com/puberty. Your body and brain and family and business partner will thank you. Cara, my kids love Magic Spoon cereal. And even though it's cereal, they actually love it as a homework snack. The variety pack has 4 flavors, cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. And fruity is the favorite flavor in my house.
Now, this pack has 0 grams of sugar, between 13 and 14 grams of protein, and between 4 and 5 grams of net carbs per serving. It's made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and it's high in protein, gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So a great choice, Vanessa.
You can go to magicspoon.com/puberty to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our, you guessed it, promo code puberty at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident you're going to love their product. It's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they will refund your money. No questions asked. They do not want you to send their cereal back to them.
Try a bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/puberty and use the code puberty to save $5. Another thing that I've heard repeatedly is that there is great value in recognizing error. So we live in this world where if you search online, I'm going to use Google as the prime example because Google's the most common. You Google search something and you get an answer. Medical information is a great example. You take that answer as fact, right? So often it is not. And yet most people Google it on page one, they click on a link, they see the information, great, done. Okay, check that, moving on. If you engage ChatGPT in an active way, it allows for time and space for students to say, wait a second, that fact isn't true, because ChatGPT is not always right. And there's a lot written about this. And so how do you teach kids how to be skeptics and how to really suss out what's a fact and what's not? You use it in this way. And educators across lots of different subjects are using it this way. But I will, can I share a story, an incredible story?
I would just say in response to that very optimistic view of ChatGPT as a teaching tool that no child I have ever cared for or taught would take the time to like excitedly troll through ChatGPT for mistakes. And Cara, really, this is a larger issue about how good or not good our kids are at recognizing false information, given the avalanche of information that comes at them.
This is my point, which is if an educator is given the opportunity in a class to say, here's the prompt, you know, tell us about the War of 1812, right?
Right.
And ChatGPT writes an essay about the War of 1812. And the opportunity is now poke holes.
Yeah.
Now find out what's wrong.
Find the 10 mistakes in this
article. That's a fascinating approach to education that we've never had before.
That I totally agree with.
I mean, it sort of reminds me of Highlights Magazine where you were supposed to find 100%. The 10 things that were wrong in the picture.
Yes, yeah. Or the grammatical exercises where it was like, find the 10 grammatical mistakes
this
and fix
them. This is
just
a different type. Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a great application. I just wouldn't have expectations that kids would use this exercise independently of their own volition.
And hence the difference between the optimist and the pessimist on this podcast. Okay, so I'm going to tell you a story, though, that should have made me a pessimist. And I share this story with permission, but I'm going to be vague because I only got permission from one player in the story. So I know a kid recently who turned in a paper, an English paper. And this was in senior year of high school. And in the window of time where grades, it was pre-grade submission for college applications. So grades are sort of, you're through that horrible junior year and you feel like it should be done. And it's not, there's still a stretch of senior year that counts maybe even more than junior counted. And turns in this paper and gets a note back from the teacher that says, I am not giving a grade on this. Not an F, not a D, not a C, not a B, not an A. I'm not giving a grade on this. And the kid reached out and said, what's going on? And the teacher said, I need some time to figure out what to do. I will meet with you tomorrow. Which, by the way, in the vein of let's be in conversation with kids, that's probably not an A-plus strategy in terms of being in conversation with kids.
And can I just say that a kid in the incredibly sensitive moment of senior year college process grades to leave them sitting with the uncertainty.
Right.
Thank God this did not happen, but there are some very scary things that a kid could choose to do in that waiting period.
And I will say it was one of the reasons my hairs stood on end when I heard this story. So the kid is trying to figure out what is going on and reaches out to a few kids in the class and finds out two things. The first is finds out a number of kids have had the same thing happen to them. And second of all, gets a tip from one of the kids saying, did you run it through an AI checker? Did you run your paper through an AI checker? Well, why would I have? I wrote the paper. Run it through an AI checker. Now, things like Turnitin are apps that are plagiarism checkers. They're checking for stolen words. But there are now a number of different AI checkers that are being used by schools all over the country. So this kid runs the paper through an AI checker, and the first AI checker deems the paper 80% likelihood that it was written by AI. Now, the funniest part of the story is this kid was completely insulted because the AI papers tend not to be very good. And this kid was like, wait a second, I thought I wrote a pretty good paper. But then it, you know, sort of dawned that this is why I'm not getting a grade. Proceeded to run it through a series of different AI checkers and got a series of different results, ranging from about 10 to about 85% likelihood that it was written by AI. So no internal consistency there. The next day, all of the kids whose papers had not been graded were gathered around this teacher's desk. And they said, what is going on? And the teacher said, I think you all used AI for your papers. By the way, half the class. And the kids looked around and they were, jaws hit the floor. They didn't know how to handle it. And this one kid who had had the time to think it through said to the teacher, okay, I did not use AI, but I need you to do something. I can't believe the kid thought of this. Said, write a sentence. Just, can you, teacher, write a sentence? So the teacher, fine, writes a sentence. And then this kid says, now run it through the AI checker. And it was something like a 75% chance that right. sentence was written by AI. And the teacher was stopped in their tracks and began to understand that these tools we have to measure supposedly stolen knowledge are terrible. And to me, the most interesting piece of this is we have a whole generation of kids that are being educated in unique ways, but they will also all face what these kids in this class face, which is accusation of not writing their own work.
Right. So I want to make two points. One, that part of AI is trained on people's writing.
That's right.
So it's not trained in a vacuum. It is trained on people's writing. And we can get to this because you and I are experiencing a few very interesting aspects of this.
Remember when we did our plagiarism checker for our book and the plagiarism checker picks out two word phrases like I am. Okay, I plagiarized that from someone.
I mean, but listen, people listening who, when their kids get, you know, accused of something, Cara and I wrote every single word of our book, unless it is quoted or cited. And we still were so paranoid about being accused of something because, you know, people do plagiarize, that we spent hundreds of dollars on a plagiarism checker so that we could literally have the proof, not only that we had spent thousands of hours together writing it, but also that we had checked it. So that's number one, that everybody is going to face this, that AI is trained on existing writing. So yes, it is going to sound like people's writing. And the better it gets, the more it is actually going to sound like a real human being's writing. And two, kids have always cheated. Kids have always cheated. Kids continue to cheat. I still remember in seventh grade, I wrote a paper about Romeo and Juliet. And my seventh grade teacher, who I will not name, even though I remember her name, accused me of plagiarizing the paper.
Mm.
And I was like partially really offended because I had written the paper, but also like, damn, that means I wrote a really good paper if she thought it was so good that I cheated. So kids have always cheated. They will always cheat. They will find more and more sophisticated ways to cheat as technology evolves. And none of us can stand as innocent of our own behavior. I mean, I remember looking over at somebody else's spelling test in grammar school and checking to see if my spelling was right, right? Like we are not innocent. But the challenge with ChatGPT is, and all of AI, is the lines are so blurry.
Mm-hmm.
And the schools and the institutions, everything is evolving so quickly that they can't keep up. And I will tell you, my kids' school, they do a ton of writing in class.
On this thing called paper.
By hand. And if not by hand, then in certain contexts, so that the teachers can be assured that it is actually the kid writing whatever the test or the essay.
And let's admit it. I mean, before ChatGPT, there were parents writing essays sometimes or tutors
Correct.
Writing essays. So,
and there was Cliff Notes and there's Spark Notes,
yes,
right? There's
there
a million ways to circumvent and all of that stuff. So I'm not pretending that any of us is perfect or, you know, infallible and that none of us has ever done this. This is just uncharted territory.
But you and I should also acknowledge that we in our own business are leaning into the AI of it all. And there are two ways we've leaned into it recently. One is smaller, the other is bigger. The smaller way is, you know, as we are going out and fundraising, we created a deck. How did we create that deck? It was unbelievable. We wrote a two paragraph description of our business, everything we do, everything we're building, how we think it's going to grow, what the model is. And out came an 11-slide slide deck that, of course, we tweaked and iterated, but the skeleton of our fundraising deck was generated by AI. And it was unbelievable. And it saved us, I am not exaggerating, dozens of hours. So that's one small way. The much bigger way that we're leaning into AI is that we will be launching very, very soon as part of our membership, an AI bot that we've called the Awkward Bot that is trained, that is trained on every piece of content we have ever created. So we are feeding it all of our books, all of our podcast transcripts, all of our curriculum, all of our written works, our blogs and our newsletters, our social media post transcriptions, and we are creating an AI version of us that is not just searchable, but will generate answers in our very charming voices for people who have questions about puberty. And so we are leaning into this technology in much the same way that I think a lot of educators are, which is, and it's not if you can't beat them, join them. It's, there are some incredible things about this technology. There are also some terrifying things about this technology.
And to be clear, the reason we feel comfortable building this is because we're using our own material. It's not just a Google search that gives you an answer. It's all the body of work that over many, many years we have created, we have researched, we've spoken to experts about, we have vetted, you know, all of that.
In fact, Google's not invited.
Google is not invited. Google, yeah. You can't come to our
party. You cannot come to our puberty party.
So, Cara, how do we want to advise people to have these conversations? Because sometimes the kids know a lot more than we do. Sometimes we know as much as them, but often we don't. And this is their world and we're just living in it. So, like, where do we begin?
Yeah. So, one way in, and I have used this way and it has worked really well for me, is to approach it the same way we approach social media, which is to get on there with them and play around and see what you find and do it together. You know, ChatGPT or any other AI bot that is used as an educational tool in that way within a family can generate so many conversations. It can be such an interesting place to begin to understand, rather than sitting at the dinner table having a conversation about what ifs. 5 minutes before dinner, do a family ChatGPT search and then talk about at dinner what it did and how crazy it is, or how interesting it is, or how wrong it was, or wherever it landed. And when you do those searches, my suggestion is don't just search a very superficial question. Like, don't just scratch the top layer, you know, what is acne, right? Once it tells you what is acne, start asking more questions. And this is actually, this is why we built our bot, because I started playing with ChatGPT, looking at this stuff, and a lot of the Google-based information is bad. And the existing AI does not know how to sort that information. It's going to take some time for the better information to rise to the top. There are a lot of people who feel that the better information will not necessarily rise to the top, that just it's a volume issue. It's sort of like the algorithms in social media. So I started asking to reference our book and start asking, you know, sort of what if we were answering it? And it was fascinating, Vanessa, it's fascinating. So that's what I would suggest is start. I mean, I wouldn't do this with super young kids, although a year from now, I may be eating those words and I may have different advice. But today, my advice would be, you know, as certainly middle and high school kids, but maybe even, you know, kids in third and fourth grade, this is a very interesting exercise to sit down as a family and ask some of these questions and then look at it and talk about it and share all of your thoughts out loud and get their thoughts and their ideas about it.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a situation where leading with curiosity, not judgment, is really critical and like kind of being dumb about it. I mean, you can literally say, I don't understand this. Or if you're like me, like, I've been so skeptical and it feels weird to me and I haven't used it. How do you use it? Like, give me a scenario where you would say, I'm going to use ChatGPT. And like one of my kids had to write a really complicated email about a potential work opportunity and wasn't sure how to go about it. And so got advice. Like that was his scenario. Another one was studying for an exam and was trying to figure out how to organize his notes. Like that was another one, right? So they started to share with me because I wasn't like, oh my God, you guys are disgusting. I can't believe you're using this. I'm so appalled. What children did I raise? I was like, I'm a moron. Teach me. So that's part of it. I think you lead with curiosity, you find out how they're using it, and then you kind of have to get into the complicated dance of like what their institutions allow, if they even know what they allow. Like, where are the lines at, you know, middle schools, high schools, colleges, graduate schools about when and how you can use something like ChatGPT within the bounds of academic ethics.
And on the flip side of that coin, I would love to do a survey of kids, and maybe we should do this on social, and ask how many of them have been flagged already by an AI checker, and what, you know, what are those experiences like? Because based upon this one story that I shared, there are so many different scenarios where you can imagine a well-intentioned teacher who's trying to protect kids from the temptations of cheating and all that goes along with it, which is part of their job, right? Arguably, they need to be screening for plagiarism. They need to be screening for authentic and original work. They're using flawed tools and they're stuck in an impossible situation. Can you imagine being the teacher who runs 20 essays through an authenticity checker and 10 of them come back as high likelihood they're written by AI? What are you supposed to do with that?
I was talking to a kid who met with his college counselor and they were trying to figure out how to address a particular issue in the activity section or something like that on the Common App. For those of you who haven't gone through this before, there's the Common App basically has a series of those questions that we filled out independently, but there's like a whole strategy behind order and word count and like what you emphasize in each response for each activity. It's actually very, it's like game theory. It's very complex. And this kid was having a meeting with a college counselor and the college counselor was like, don't laugh, but I'm going to ask ChatGPT how we should fill this out. And yet in the same meeting, the college counselor was like, ChatGPT cannot write your college essay for you. The schools will know. Like, these kids have to hold some very complicated truths at the same time. Now, this was a seasoned educator who was like naming to an 18-year-old, like, hey, this is a little ridiculous, but I'm going to hold these two things in front of you and talk you through this really complicated thing. You can use ChatGPT for this part of college applications, but you can't use it for this. But like, how does a 12-year-old understand those two competing pieces of information?
That is so bananas to think about holding those two things. I have to give that college counselor a lot of credit that they narrated how they were using ChatGPT. And I think that's a great teachable moment. Like, with any new tool, if we can narrate how we use it and why we're using it, it doesn't make the use of it okay in every situation, but it provides a whole lot more structure. And especially when you're trying to model something for a kid, I think it really makes a difference to do that piece. I mean, listen, we give this advice in every episode. It's like, get to the why, explain the why, explain the rationale. I think ChatGPT is no different.
And I was totally blown away. I mean, I keep thinking about, so I grew up with a thesaurus and a dictionary on my desk. And, you know, when I wrote, I would pull out my thesaurus or I would pull out my dictionary. And I remember when it was early enough in computers, like when my kids were younger, where you could just look it up on the thesaurus. And I was like, so appalled that my kid was Googling synonyms instead of pulling out the thesaurus that I had proudly bought him and put on his bookshelf by his desk. And he was like, what's the difference? Like, why does it matter if I'm looking it up in a book or I'm searching up online? I'm still searching for a good synonym. Of course, now I use the online thesaurus like 400 million times a day. But that transition for me of how we use technology was like very rooted in my own past.
And I'm going to defend your brain because it does feel to our generation like using an online tool or a computerized tool is a more passive form of learning. And actually picking up the book and thumbing through and reading is a more active. And I think we're probably wrong. Like, I think if we were being PET scanned while we were doing these things, our brains aren't processing the information so differently, but it feels different. It actually
does feel different.
And so I agree. Like, I felt the same way. I had a very similar experience.
But then I watched them go through it and be like, no, that's not the right word. No, that's not what I meant. Like, they go through the same act of thinking and discarding and trying on and experimenting and like either get to the right word or get to the wrong word. It's not my business because I do not touch my children's essays ever. But I will sometimes watch them as they go through that process. And it's like they're doing the hard thinking and the assessment. But I'm such a like, what's the word? Not ascetic.
A Luddite. Luddite
when it comes to, but also, Cara, here's the interesting thing. We are writers. We love words. We love language. We love the journey of writing and the experience of writing and even the collaborative writing, right? But like, and I'm good at math, but I don't love math. I don't think of myself as a mathematician. I'm very happy to use whatever tools available for math that I would be much less likely to use in my pride and joy, which is my writing. So I also think, and this is a point I want to make, all of our kids have some things that come easier to them and some things that are harder for them. And yes, we want them to get stronger at the things that they're weaker in and continue to grow strong in the things they're already strong in. But everybody has their shortcomings, everybody has their weaknesses, and sometimes people just need a little extra help in certain areas. And I'm like, what are all the ways that AI could help kids with learning challenges and disabilities and really help them flourish in amazing ways in the areas where they've really been struggling?
And in the case of our deck, I will say...
Which you, I mean, don't say we, because you created it and I just get to like do a little tiny, teeny, tiny bit of tinkering. So the we is a very generous we.
I'm going to say we. Me and my AI bot. For me, the use of AI was taking the blank canvas that was staring me down and it got me started.
Totally.
And I think that's, you know, what you've described, whether it's a letter for a job or how to start a resume. There are a lot of those analogous experiences that AI has already been really helpful for. You go on Google and you put in the first two letters and it anticipates, and sometimes it anticipates better. Like I might do a Google search that's really clunky and it may suggest a phrase that's a lot more elegant. And that no more blank canvas. I mean, there are a lot of arguments against that, but it is helpful in the moment to have something, I was going to say someone, but I'm going to say something sort of get you off your starting block and get you going. So to that end, it is so bizarre that we are doing, I mean, I never would have thought in my wildest dreams when we started this podcast 3 years ago that we would be doing an episode telling the adults in kids' lives, hey, there is this very sophisticated form of artificial intelligence that is going to be pervasive in their school life and in their personal life. And it is time for you to embrace it and learn about it and get vocal where you want to push back against it. But don't be passive and just sit by the sidelines and think that if you ignore it, it will go away. This is here to stay. At your open house next fall, I 100% guarantee that one of the presentations you will get from a teacher is how AI in general and ChatGPT in particular are being used in their classroom. So you've got a head start on learning about how that works and what the pros and cons are and how it's going to impact the way your kids think and learn and you, the way you think and learn.
So press stop on this episode and go find a kid in your life and ask them authentically and curiously how they are using ChatGPT or some other form of AI, and then sit and listen without judging, without freaking out. Get curious, because I have no doubt you will learn a lot.
Thanks, Vanessa.
Thanks, Cara. We absolutely love hearing your feedback and getting all your questions. So anytime you want to be in touch, email us at thepubertypodcast@gmail.com. If you're looking for great puberty products, like the Oom shorts or the Oom socks or the Oom bra. Do you get the theme there? Go to myoomla.com. If you want more content, you love what we do on the Puberty Podcast, and you want to have us come speak or learn more about our book or subscribe to our amazing newsletter, The Awkward Roller Coaster, go to orderofmagnitude.co. Remember, it's .co because we don't have enough money to buy .com. Yet.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.